Bloomberg Surveillance with Michael McKee and Tom Keane. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Gideon Rose joins us, who works at Foreign Affairs Magazine. Gideon, good morning.
Hi, Tom. Good to see you.
Dr. Rose, your page, your website is all on Iraq. What is the summary of the work of Foreign Affairs and the Council on Foreign Relations? What do we need to know to assess the cross currents right now in Iraq?
How did you put it? It's a $2 stock that used to be worth something. The fact is that you're seeing in Iraq now is consequences of the Game of Thrones scenario that we initiated when we toppled Saddam Hussein. The United States came in and knocked out a very, very nasty authoritarian ruler who had his country basically inside a giant prison. And once we did that, we didn't really know what to do with it. The Bush administration didn't have any plans and didn't want to get involved running the prison itself. And so it basically tried to anoint some rulers from some of the prison groups. It turned out that they started fighting each other. And the result is that right now the gangs inside Iraq and the broader region are in all-out war. The Obama administration traded the relative calm and peace of the surge to walk out with our heads high, troops walking out under fire, not being under fire. And now that we're out, the prisoners, former prisoners, are fighting each other, and we have no idea what to do, and we're not going to go back, and basically it sort of sucks to be an Iraqi.
Right. Gideon Rose with us with Foreign Affairs Magazine. Of course, Mike, the one metric I'm looking at is the distance to Baghdad. We originally started out with Mosul, so my recollection is 220 miles away, and then 70.
Here's a lot of what we don't know is the real strength of ISIS and whether or not, because what they do is they hopscotch around. You've looked at, there are people who've put together maps of territory, and one day they hold it, one day they don't.
Yeah.
And the idea is they come strike close to Baghdad to try to strike fear into people's hearts without actually holding that territory. There are some who say there's only about 1,500 people in there.
I was going to say 800. But, you know, if you want to say 1,500, fine, but 34 miles outside. And then there's almost this idea of not even taking Baghdad. Gideon Rose, when you look at this cacophony, let's, in this segment, start with Iran. What should be or what is a good prescription for the United States to develop some modicum of trust in conversation with Iran?
It's a huge question. The fact is that Iran has several different conflicts with us. One is about their nuclear program. Another is about support for terrorism. Third is about, in effect, the Sunni-Shia sectarian divide going on in the region. And what we're trying to negotiate on the nuclear front, and what we're seeing right now is we have this weird dynamic alongside of that in Iraq. Basically, we handed Iraq over to the Shias in Iraq, who are the majority force there. But in the region more generally, the Sunnis are dominant. And so the Iranians like the idea of Iraq being run by Shia, and so they are, since they're also Shia. And so now the Iranians are, in effect, backing the Shia government in Iraq that we helped set up and back. Sunnis in Iraq and in the region more generally don't like that government, which has not behaved well, and are fighting. And so you have this ISIS group, which basically are Sunni radicals, Sunni militant Islamist jihadists, Al-Qaeda types. They were a franchise of Al-Qaeda. They've actually been disowned from the major Al-Qaeda group for their brutality, which says something. But they're fighting the Shia. And so we find ourselves on the same side as Iran in Iraq, but opposed to Iran more generally because we're actually allied with Saudi Arabia and other Sunni states in the region. So it's very, very complicated. Basically, we have the same enemies as Iran does inside Iraq. That's the crazy Sunni jihadists. And to a certain extent, we have the same allies, the current Iraqi government, or Shia. But we have different goals. The Iranians want the Iraqi government to behave as a Shia force, the sectarian power, furthering Iranian ends and Shia ends more generally. We want the current government in Iraq to act more like a national unity government. And the problem is that so we and the Iranians are pulling the Iraqi government in different directions.
Gideon, one of them is, and this goes back to interviews I did with Christopher Hitchens a decade ago, some would say a lifetime ago, is northern Iraq is actually pretty stable. It's remarkably different than Iraq. Tell us about how we should approach this economy of Kurdistan.
Well, it's a really interesting question. So Iraq has different ethnic groups, and they're not necessarily linked together. So the Kurds in northern Iraq are increasingly not just somewhat stable, they're even getting their act together in terms of the political situation there, and they're kind of allying in a soft way with Turkey to create an economically viable zone in which good things are happening in the north. But they're yoked to this Sunni craziness in the middle of the country, and of course the Shia government in Baghdad in the south. So the Kurds have a kind of semi-autonomous region now. They've been under our protection ever since the end of the Gulf War. And the interesting question will be what actually happens. There are some people who think that the overall settlement in the Middle East, referred to as the Sykes-Picot settlement from the people who set it up after World War I, is actually changing, and you're going to see borders moving around and different groups coming together. I'm not sure about that, but what's going on in the north of Iraq and Kurdistan is both positive, but it's positive in a small area that's not linked to a normal natural national border. And so the future of that is promising, but it's still up in the air if the entire region goes to hell.
And Mike, I've seen at the War Museum in the United Kingdom the map that Lawrence of Arabia got angry about, like in Peter O'Toole and Lawrence of Arabia, when they made Sykes-Picot, where they divided.
Well, you know, we're in this interesting situation now because essentially, in many respects, the Middle East is a little bit like Europe in the 13th or 14th century, in the sense that the stable boundaries of national groups aren't really there, and you have lots of different authorities, religious, political, social, all swirling around. And yet we have a fixed state system and global economic system put in place on top of all that. And so you've got a pot that bubbles at the bottom but has a lid capped on it on the top, and that's where you get a lot of this turmoil from.
I'm wondering, when you talk about the Kurds and the fact that people it's become regional rather than with the artificial borders. But how does Turkey fit into this? I think their troubles with the Kurds, but I also think the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Well, the Turks didn't like the Kurds inside Turkey because they considered them a sort of restive minority and they wanted to suppress them. But they're actually having some economic dealings with Kurdistan and Iraq. The Turks are Sunnis, and they bet against Syria and Assad. They're now finding that a bit of a mess. So the Turks are connected to all this. They're co-religionists, but they're different ethnically. It's yet another bit of a mess in this whole broader picture. And, of course, Erdogan's own turn towards authoritarianism is giving him heartburn at home as that becomes some of this.
Well, do they essentially make common cause with their own Kurds? I mean, Kurdistan is going to be – I mean, they're not going to respect the border of Turkey as Kurds. So do they make peace with them? Is this an opportunity for the Kurds?
Well, I mean, I think that the Kurds in Turkey, the Turks don't want to have the Kurds in Turkey being very active politically, but they want to have economic relations with Kurdistan in Iraq. You know, it's interesting. What this all brings together, I think, is how energy is so affected by so many different factors, not just technology and the global economy, which is what we think of, but also by the environmental concerns now that you see in things like Keystone or fracking and so forth in the U.S., but also geopolitics. So you can't talk about Crimea without talking about Russian gas going to Germany. You can't talk about what's happening in Iraq without talking about how the pipelines are going to play out. Mm-hmm. And so essentially all these decisions about everything from fracking to Keystone to what's going on in foreign policy mm-hmm. with Russia are all tied together. It all comes back to energy.
Gideon, thank you so much.
Bloomberg Surveillance, weekday mornings at 7 Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2. Or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.